It's a special Monday night edition of What's on Joe Mind as the team preps for the 2011 Canadian JoeCon. Tonight, we'll discuss the full Canadian JoeCon schedule, its guests, and the highly sought-after exclusives. If you're traveling from the States, we'll tell you what you need to do to get in and out of Canada, along with some convention tips, tricks, and etiquette. Later, we'll put on our fedoras and we'll do some Joe archaeology with the latest finds from Goggles of Picard as we ask the question, was Joe going to go 6-inch scale? Next, we'll talk about SK Omega and help you fill in the blanks and clear up the confusion in preparation of our exclusive interview with the Molten Monkey Gang coming up in a few weeks. Chuck will revisit the classics by taking the team back in time to talk about the Marvel comic. Plus, news from Renegades, G.I. Joe 2, and the G.I. Joe Club. Are you ready for a real American hero? It's the super defense, the Joes versus the high-octane offense of Cobra tonight on What's on Joe Mind. That's right, it's a special Monday edition of What's on Joe Mind. I guess it really doesn't matter. I mean, this is a podcast, so I guess you can listen to it on any day you want. But hey, you know, with the Monday thing, it makes it sound so much more special. It's the special Monday edition of What's on Joe Mind.
Special for Chuck, because it's interrupting the Monday Night Raw.
Oh, God forbid. Sports entertainment gets interrupted. Hey,
keep making jokes.
This is What's on Joe Mind. It's a fan cast about the world of G.I. Joe, and it's the only weekly podcast solely dedicated to Joe. Nothing else. I'm Gary. Joining me tonight, as always, is our showrunner, Greg, from a far-off place, some sort of remote location. Are we, Greg?
Hey, how's it going?
How's the mobile studio treating you tonight?
It's dark and it's scary.
It's a studio. From New York, Mr. Reliable Chuck is here. Chuck, how's it going?
What's up, guys? Good evening.
And finally, the Joe community's number one authoritative news source. Everyone say hi to General Joe's Justin.
What's going on, guys?
Just nothing but crickets after you talk.
I was going to say, everybody says hi. Apparently means something else to you.
Hi, Justin. How are you?
All right, that makes me feel better.
It's another Canadian night here on the program. Actually, it's Canadian week. Greg, you all packed?
Not at all.
That's all right.
Well, I'm packing for moving.
Oh, there you go. Justin, you all packed?
Yeah, I'm packed to spend the night in my bed. But...
The dude that's closest to the convention site is the guy that never gets a chance to go.
Hey, I'm not all that close. I'm close to like the Montreal side of Canada, but I don't know where the hell this Hamilton is.
You know, speaking of Montreal, this weekend up in Montreal, last weekend actually, it was the Formula One Canadian Grand Prix. And just to tie a little pop culture into this, guess who shows up on the grid? None other than the Fat Jedi himself, Lucas, as he's with the Williams Formula One team. Can you ever imagine Larry Hama ever standing up there on a grid in a Formula One race?
No. I can't quite picture that.
It's like, Larry, show some excitement. Well, come on, Larry. Larry,
There's
stop.
A pretty mellow guy.
Yeah. Stop drawing pictures of snake eyes. Come on. Let's go watch some cars. Well, here's how you contact the program. It's whatsonjoemind@gmail.com. You can get us at our Podbean page at whatsonjoemind.podbean.com and the mobile site whatsonjoemind.podbean.com/mobile for all mobile devices covering iPhones, Android, BlackBerry, mobile, Windows Mobile, any phone that has an internet browser and can support MP3 playback. That's not a script. That was actually all from the top of my head.
Nice.
Yeah, I know. I should be a waiter somewhere, I guess, if I miss my calling. You can also catch us on Facebook at...
Better than IT these days.
Oh, maybe. You can also catch us on Facebook at facebook.com/whatsonjoemind. And you can stop by our home site of Joe Classified and subscribe to us at iTunes. So there's the welcome and intro. Let's turn it over to Greg to get this thing started. Greg, you're the man.
All right, here we go. The news for the week. We received some of the final details for the Canadian Joe Convention, including the reveal of the last two figures, and then also an updated plan for Saturday. And I believe, did everyone get a chance to take a look at the figures?
Everyone is furiously clicking with their browsers right now.
Oh, I've got mine up. I'm prepared. Show Prep is my middle name.
Justin, Show Prep, go ahead and talk about him while you're at it.
Well, revealed today was Takedown and Mudslinger. Takedown looks to be the the physical fitness expert, the drill instructor of the G.I. Joe side of the Canadian team up there. It looks like he's got a new head sculpt created by the same folks, whoever's been creating his heads, the heads for the Canadian Joe configs. This looks like another one of their pieces. It's pretty nice. The figure's a little bit plain, a little bit more plain than some of the others we've seen, but he's a drill instructor. I don't know how elaborate he really needs to be. Kind of dark red tank top, black pants. Pretty cool looking figure. I like the head sculpt a lot. I like the beard and the hair sculpt and the sunglasses. He definitely kind of looks like the drill instructor type. He's pretty muscular.
He's a ginger.
I didn't say that.
Orange hair. We just need to get a little brown marker and add some freckles, and there you go.
And Mudslinger is another Cobra agent by the looks of things, kind of bluish black. His head, it might be a BTR head. I don't know. Is that a BTR Shadow Viper, Gary? Can you tell? Or is it a new head?
Not necessarily from the angles that we have. I mean, it might be a new head. We can always ask when we get there, but I like it. I mean, it looks mean. It looks menacing. It looks like the dude's in charge and he's ready to act.
Yeah, it looks like he's a saboteur with a secondary specialty in chemical warfare. Very cool looking figure. I like him a lot.
Burbank, California?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I guess your chemical people come from these states.
but yeah, the two figures look great. Another good addition to the Canadian Joe-Con figure set this year. Joining Captain Ruin, Spook, the Coyote Troopers, Trace Route, and Valkyrie. So it's great. I kind of like the fact that they're focusing more on figures and less on vehicles this year. You know, I've never really been a big vehicle guy. I'm much more about the characters and the figures and stuff. So I think it's cool that we're getting a little bit more of that this year.
Well, you can only vac metal chrome so much. And then every year it's expected. Like, what are you going to chrome this year?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, Chuck, what do you think?
Well, I gotta be honest, Takedown, I do not like the way he looks. First of all, I hate that pistol. I hated that pistol, oh my god. When I saw it, and I first saw it with the comic 2-pack of scrap iron, I thought, oh man, that's gonna be a cool looking gun. No hand can hold that gun. I mean, even now, if you look at it, it's not even – the hand's not holding it. It's balanced. It's the handle is too short and too wide. It's a nice-looking revolver, but it's unfunctional. Now, the figure himself, I hate to say, but the torso looks a little too long and for the arms and, like, I don't know, maybe it's me, but one arm looks a little more muscular than the other, and neither one is in proportion to the chest.
That could be – that's Roadblock's arm. At least that's Roadblock's hand.
Yeah.
With the big gaping grip there. So, I mean, you can interchange the hands with different parts of the arm, of course, but maybe they just took the whole thing over and said, here you go. But that may be why. I don't know. We'll get a closer look at it on Saturday, though.
Yeah, the figure does suffer a little bit from the substandard parts that they used. I mean, the 25th anniversary Roadblock really isn't the highlight of the modern era. You know, it's got those big, huge ball shoulders, and it isn't translated perfectly well here. But, of course, you know, they're limited to what they can choose and what they have access to. But
right. No, I'm just saying, it's, you know, and but this is the first Canadian Joe-Con figure that I said, no, I don't like the way he looks. Now, moving on over to Mudslinger. Mudslinger. I'm having a flashback to a great a Master Transformer. Oh, sorry, wrong podcast. Anyway.
We're going to dock you again, man. We're going to dock you.
I like the way he looks. I like how they... it must be sharing some tooling with the 25th anniversary Snow Serpent because he's using that harness pack. I just, you know, that rifle, you know, that little shot, that you know, automatic shotgun that first came with a Falcon in the 2-pack with Nemesis Enforcer. It's like, I thought it was cool with him, but when it started getting reused, I don't know, it just fell out of favor with me, and it just, for a little bit, takes away from the figure. But other than that, he looks good. I like the little turquoise blue, and, you know, I'm sure that he'll look really good in person, and, you know, when you get him in person, you can switch out whatever, you know, that rifle for whatever something you guys might like.
All right, Greg. Well, do we want to talk about the schedule and I guess what we want to call the convention schedule and convention events that are going on?
Yeah, if you want to go ahead and take that, I do not have the list in front of me.
That's what you get from a cold, dark mobile studio.
Yes.
All right. For those of us that are going there, there's a couple things that need to know to get into the country. And this is for, of course, if I'm talking to Canadian nationals, this is no-brainer. This is like, you know, for you going next door, for like me going next door, no big deal. Americans getting up there, you will need your passport, whether that be flying or crossing the border. So make sure when you're crossing the border or whatever border checkpoint you go through, make sure you have a passport for everybody in your vehicle. I forget what the children's cutoff is, but if you're all traveling up as adults, everyone needs to have their passport. Flying to Canada, in most cases, you will, when you receive on your flight to Canada, you'll receive your Canadian customs form. Make sure you fill that out. So carry a pen with you or something so you don't have to fill it out once you hit the ground. You'll go through customs once you land, and then you can come out on a concourse. And there actually is a shuttle from the airport to the Sheridan, but you can always grab a cab. So just keep that in mind. Be friendly with the border crossing agents. 9 times out of 10, they just want to kind of whisk you through. But if they ask you what you're doing, just tell them you're going to the Canadian G.I. Joe convention in Toronto. Last time we did that, the guy's like, oh, yeah, I played with Joe's when I was a kid too, eh? And so, you know, so it was actually a good time.
Had to throw that A in there, didn't you?
You know, I need to watch Strange Brew again to kind of get the accent down a little bit more.
Well, now, Gary, you're talking as if, you know, everybody wants to cross the border legally. Now, I think I should mention a few techniques for those of us who are a bit more adventurous. Basically,
well, you want to get in a barrel and go over Niagara Falls?
Well, no, Niagara Falls would be coming from Canada to the United States.
Whatever.
Now, if we're going up the fall, then maybe. Yeah.
Up the fall? No, you can't do that.
Yeah, but no. But basically, guys, what you want to make is some rope out of bed sheets. If you're any survivalist, this is Survival 101. You want to wait till dusk. Not dark, but dusk. As you make your way to the border, usually I would start with like 100 miles out. You want to move at a accelerated but not running pace and darting back and forth. If you get hungry, I'm sure somewhere in those plains areas you'll find some wild game that you can, you know, using your trusty pocket knife, hunt, expire, and then cook. There's usually some natural herbs for flavor. Now, when you get to the border,
Chuck,
you'll be...
Yes? Chuck, where are you going with this?
I really don't know anymore.
We do not endorse anybody crossing the border illegally, okay?
Yeah. What's on your mind podcast does not condone any illegal hunting either.
Right. Okay, so Friday, June 18th, from 6:30 to 8:45 is early registration. From 6:45 to 8:45 is Friday night admission, which is $25 per Canadian, per person, $25 Canadian. That's funny. And this, he also says here, also includes early and regular admission on Saturday. If you are pre-registered for Saturday, Friday is only $10 Canadian. 7:30 to 8:45 is pickup pre-order t-shirts, comics, and trading cards. So you will not be getting, if you pre-ordered your set, one of the 25 that pre-order your set, you will not be getting your set Friday night. So do not ask. With that said, make sure that if you did pre-order, just print off all your paperwork and have it with you in person when you do register Saturday morning. Saturday morning, 7:30 is early registration, $25 per person. No chance to purchase Consett with this option unless you already have a wristband. So apparently, for those of you going to stand overnight, same old thing again, you're going to get a wristband. This was the same thing in 09. Last year, they also did wristbands, so it's going to continue. Let's see, 8 o'clock, registration forms available and picked up. So you can also in line fill out registration forms. 8:30, this is when you can get your pre-ordered Consett shirts, comics, etc. This is when you can get them picked up, just for the 25 or so that did that already. 9 o'clock, convention doors officially open. And from 10 to 10:45, they call it Zartan Swamp Meet. It's a trading session. Bring your items to trade. No exchanging of cash during a trading session, please. It was funny. I was talking with James Cavanaugh about this, and he's like, he wonders how many people are going to kind of try to trade him a bunch of Joes for a book. he's like, I don't think that's going to work. the first little big guests do their Q&A starting at 11. That's Ron Rudat from 11:45. 12:30 to 1:15 is Mark Bellomo talking about his book. Books, actually. He'll be talking about the Ultimate Guide and the Totally Tubular 80s. 1:45 to 2:30 will be Hasbro Canada, which should be a good one. Anytime you get a chance to talk with anybody associated with Canada, it's always a good conversation. Last time Hasbro Canada was there was 2009, and they had actually a multimedia presentation in the whole nine yards. So and they showed some stuff that you didn't see at JoeCon that year, which was really nice. 2:45 to 3:30, Bazooka's Trivia Contest, or Trivia's Challenge, excuse me. 3:45 to 4:30, Ask the Staff, Q&A with the staff of the 2011 Canadian JoeCon, and at 5 o'clock, the convention is over. So those are your schedule of events, the timeline that you'll be seeing if you go up to Canada this weekend. Guys, have any questions about how the Canadian works, or Canadian JoeCon works, or anything like that? You can always ask me, because I've been there.
So I heard that Mike had mentioned there's a free table usually every year.
Yes.
Is that anybody can bring anything and put it on the free table?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Excellent. I have a bunch of random old comics that I'll probably bring up. Hopefully there's some kids that come to the convention and they'll pick them up.
Will then, Intercon...
What?
Go ahead.
Chuck?
Oh, I was just going to ask, I know with some other conventions, will there be an intercontinental breakfast served?
Nothing intercontinental, whether it be breakfast or title defense.
There's a little rustling on.
I know, man. He's a guy that got, you know, sports
Chuck
entertainment on the brain.
Sleep at the wheel.
I know.
Well, no. Because in America, it's continental. So I figure in Canada and outside of the, you know, United States, it's intercontinental.
That was lame, Chuck, even for you.
Choke on that empty air.
We had like those three terrible jokes right in succession.
Now. Yeah, just exactly. But that's it. If you have any other questions for the show, for the Canadian convention, you can always email them to the show, whatsonjoemind@gmail.com, and Greg can forward those out, and we'll try to answer those for you. But looking forward to it. It's going to be a fun time.
So for God's sake, give us something to talk about.
Yeah. Anything but intercontinental breakfasts.
Or title defenses.
Or title defenses.
Greg, when are you leaving for the convention?
We're taking off Wednesday night. We're going to drive through the night, and then we should get to Toronto probably around noon on Thursday, and then we're going to try to catch the Blue Jays and Orioles game.
Nice.
So, all right. Trying to make a little...
So are we going to do, like, a special convention prep for Greg? Like, you know, the do's and don'ts of, you know, first-time convention goers, you know?
Sure, we could do that.
It's like, we're changing the show on the fly.
Wait. No, I'm not saying tonight's show. I'm just saying
tonight's kind of the last night before he goes up there, Chuck. So
No. Well, we got him Friday night. We got him Friday night in line where he's going to be the man of the people, and he will interview people.
Oh, yeah, we're doing it. We're doing something Friday night, right?
Yes,
that's right. The time he was going to spend the night in line, and then he was wussing out or something.
Then he
like
did
that.
Wuss out.
Heard something about
not he would. He did.
You did.
Wait, Greg, you haven't manned up yet. I mean, come on.
It's not Friday yet. You got time to change your mind, Greg. Come on.
This is our first convention, Greg. The people at home listening, this is like do or die for us. This is our way to be, you know, the podcast. It's going to be there at Canadian JoeCon, and you can be there with them, talking to the people, getting to know them, spreading the words. Greg, do you feel it, Greg?
No. So the plan is for me to go a little bit early on Saturday morning, see who's all in line and try to talk to people. I might have to hand out Red Bulls ahead of time, though. Otherwise, I'm guessing it's just going to be a lot of mumbling and slobbering. But
yeah, it's pretty typical.
A quick reminder to everyone coming from the United States.
Mumbling and slobbering is pretty much every convention I've ever been to.
Yeah.
That's a good point. quick reminder to everyone coming from the States, make sure or at least try to get Canadian money ahead of time instead of going to Canada and getting it there.
Oh, very good point. Very good point, yes.
Typically, I believe you're supposed to get ordered a couple of weeks ahead of time, but because we're on crunch time, you might have to find a bigger bank. It may not be local, but you might have to drive for a bit in order to get it. Highly recommended, though, because they will not change back as well, I believe. Like, you'll get cash. You can exchange your money back on the way back, but you can't exchange your...
Oh, no, they're making money off you. They're and they do it in the airport, too. So if you can't get a chance, if you're listening to this on a Tuesday, because we're going to try to put this up tonight, and you're listening to it on a Tuesday, you may or may not, depending on your bank, have enough time to get that money exchanged. My bank, fortunately, my wife works for the bank. I have 24-hour turnaround time, so
everybody just call Gary. And
yeah, that's right. Call me. I will send you to my wife, and then she can try to get you money. No, do not do that. I'll be in so much trouble. But most time it is 20, and it is Canadian money, so it's readily available. It's not like you're getting rupees or RMBs or anything like that, which might take an extra day or so. But it's not as hard. But like Greg said, if you're crossing the border by car, that there's normally a place right there at the border that will change money. They're going to make money off you. There's going to be, you know, commission charges, and in the airports even more. But they'll be there. In fact, in baggage pickup in the main, and I believe in the main concourse there at the Toronto Airport, there's a Travelex exchange there. So hedge your bets. You know, yeah, you can pay them now or pay them later or just go to your bank, and sometimes it's just a small nominal fee. So, good point, Greg.
All right. I'd like to anybody else has any more questions about the convention or would like to meet up with us, I mean, we'll be around and you should be able to find us. Gary is a known celebrity, so you should be able to spot him, but I'll be going incognito. So if you'd like to meet up with us, send me an email. We'll try to meet up at a certain time. And hopefully we'll see a bunch of people up there.
Just don't look for us in line on Friday night because we won't be there.
Right. But how am I a known celebrity?
You're the face. The face of the franchise.
The face of the franchise. Please, we're in trouble if that's the case.
It's one ugly franchise.
Yeah, no kidding. Whew.
Gary, you're going too?
Yeah, haven't you? You haven't heard the word?
No, I thought this was Greg's first, you know, convention. I mean, I was going to talk to him, like, you know, how to make a shiv out of a paper cup. That way, you know, in case he has to shank somebody in line.
No, this is Canada. You don't want to be locked up abroad, dude.
Every time you talk about conventions, you're talking about stabbing somebody, Chuck.
I know, man. What is up with you Transformer people? Why are you always so violent? Violence is not the answer.
Actually, I think it has more to do with being from New York, but the idea is...
Well, that's probably true. I mean, Justin and I can agree to that.
you do it, you don't get caught.
If you're not cheating, you're not trying?
Yeah, well...
Okay.
I mean, well, wait a minute. So basically, I don't need to go into my whole spiel about how, you know, showering once during the whole weekend is not acceptable. Wearing the same shirt that supports your website is a bad idea.
Okay, I'm checking off that shirt right now.
You can wear a shirt that supports this podcast, right?
Hey, let me tell you, if there was enough time to get, like, you know, What's on Joe Mind shirts made, you know that Greg would be going up there with a giant sack of them on his back.
Standing up to the kids in line.
Just write it on your forehead in Sharpie or something.
Wait a minute, you say hand them out? How about sell them to the kids in line?
There is not a single person in line that's going to buy a What's on Joe Mind t-shirt. I'm going to tell you that right now.
I maybe not now, but I think soon. I mean, I'm telling you, we're becoming famous.
No, you're becoming famous, Chuck.
We just make Chuck t-shirts.
What's up, Chuck? All right, let's get to these 6-inch prototypes, shall we?
Yes.
Yes.
So last week, there's two different threads that popped up. The first one was posted by Gear Viper. It was a 6-inch prototype of a Cobra Commander figure, which I had never heard of, and it was a complete shock to me. And then a few days later, I believe his name is not Picard, is his screen name. He posted what he believes to be a Duke 6-inch figure, and based on some problem solving on his side, he figured out that they would have come out around the same time as G.I. Joe versus Cobra reboot. The line from 2002. But did you guys get a chance to take a look at those, and what did you think of them?
Shoot, Justin, I know you got an interesting take on these
things. Oh, yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, first and foremost, I guess they were shown in the Joe Declassified booth last year, but not too many people showed a whole lot of interest, so they kind of faded out of people's minds. But, you know, I've read – there's a book called Toy Wars by Gene Wayne Miller, I think is the author's name, that came out quite a while ago that kind of chronicles the little war between Hasbro and Mattel in the 90s. It's a fascinating read. And they talked about – and that's kind of why my initial opinion matched Gary's on that, and that maybe it was something that came out in the 90s, because they were talking about, you know, in the 90s as the superhero toy lines were evolving, they were trying to figure out ways to combat that by, you know, reconceiving the G.I. Joe brand as something a little bit more superhero-ish and a little bit larger in scale, and that's where G.I. Joe Extreme was built from. But then you look at this stuff and – you know, I got to say, Patrick, you know, not Picard, his observations are right on the money, I think. And the figures themselves look, I think they look pretty cool. You know, it's interesting that they seem to be a little bit more articulated in the 6-inch scale than they actually ended up being in the 4-inch scale. Like maybe they had experimented with making pretty nicely articulated, detailed 6-inch figures. And when those plans fell through, they scaled things back a little bit and just stuck with a little bit more basic articulation, but the figures are great. I really like the way Patrick kind of compared the figure is labeled as Short Fuse, I guess, on the Ziploc bag that he has this prototype in, but it's pretty obvious to me it's most likely Duke, just because I don't think they would have tooled up a Short Fuse before they tooled up anybody else.
And what's the matter with Short Fuse?
And it really matches the catalog art that they had going around that time for the Joe versus Cobra stuff. It almost matches it exactly, to the point where it's pretty obvious that these were most likely prototypes for a 2002 G.I. Joe relaunch that would have featured somewhat larger figures. And it's really funny to think, you know, there was such a fan outcry over the loss of the O-ring. What would have happened if the O-ring was lost and the figures were 6 inches tall?
Can I answer that?
Yeah.
Death of the line.
There you go.
Thank you.
They're great, and it brings some interesting stuff to mind, especially the way Chuck was talking a little bit during, you know, before the show about, you know, would the 6-inch scale ever work for G.I. Joe? Would there be a reason to go to a 6-inch scale? Would we like to see any figures in the 6-inch scale? And to a certain point, yeah. I mean, these figures that they showed were very much 2002 era, kind of, you know, the trench coat for Cobra Commander, that raised collar. It's all pretty similar to how he ended up in the 4-inch version. But the question comes up is, would you ever buy a 6-inch line if it was a little bit more like the classic stuff, you know, kind of a super detailed, hyper-articulated line? And it's kind of funny, because over on JoeDeClassified.com, Guy Viper posted a thread about that, kind of asking that question. And the results were resoundingly negative, which I was kind of surprised on at some perspective. But I don't know, they're awesome. I love it when stuff like this that's 10, 12 years old kind of surfaces and takes people by surprise and really shows some cool concepts that never made it really past the planning stages. I love this kind of stuff. I think it's really cool. And knowing me in 2002, I probably would have been all fired up for it, even if it would have pissed off everybody else.
But that's never stopped you before.
That's true. That's true. And if nothing else, it actually encourages me sometimes.
Burdens you. What a burden you carry.
but I think they look great. I mean, it's a really cool piece of history. And if you go over to JotaClassified.com and look at the comparison pictures that Patrick took, between the 4-inch version and the 6-inch versions, between that card art, it's pretty clear that these were concepts for the Joe versus Cobra stuff. And I love it. I love seeing this stuff. And I'm hoping maybe at next year's con, JotaClassified will have another booth, and maybe we can get a little bit closer up look at them, because there's some real potential for cool stuff in there. Makes you really think about what else might be out there that you don't even
know. That's again, I was getting ready to say, if you've seen one, now we've seen two. And I remember last year at the D-Class table, because I was working at the D-Class table, but you've seen one, you've seen two. What more is out there, whether it be through the Asian markets or what is still being held by Hasbro? You know, sometimes they don't really know what we're interested in. You know, for when did we recently start seeing two-ups and that sort of thing start appearing in their cases within the last, 2-3 years or so? And before, I don't think you ever hardly saw any of that stuff. Yeah. So, you know, maybe we'll see some more uncovered here in the years to come. You know, I was one of the people on Goggle's thread that said no. You know, as much grief I give Justin about Sigma 6, if I'm not going 8-inch, I'm certainly not going 6-inch. But I look on my wall here and I have all these Battlestar Galactica figures, and those are 6-inch. And I believe back when Metal Gear Solid had their figures, those were about 6-inch, and I found a whole bunch of those. And I'm like, well, a little hypocritical, eat my words, I guess. Would I be a diehard collector of a 6-inch line? No, not if they're selling 3¾. If they drop the line altogether, I would be tempted. But you might just see me upset at that point and say, nah, you're not getting any more of my money. But I like the archaeology. I like finding these little hidden gems. I like that we have members in the community that are dedicated, that want to keep this stuff documented. And anytime that you can do that, that's just that's a positive for the community.
Yeah, I agree on that totally. It's really cool this stuff is kind of coming to light. It's amazing that it takes a long time sometimes with the floodgates just start opening. You got to wonder where the Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow are, because you figure those have got to be out there somewhere.
Oh, for sure.
Yep, definitely. I think it's interesting that it would have went towards the 6-inch line right when Marvel Legends was getting big. And then now, I don't know when the transition happened. It must have been with the line before Marvel Universe, whatever those are called, the 3¾-inch Marvel figures.
Yeah, the Superhero Showdown stuff,
yeah. Yeah, there we go. But it seems like pretty much every figure line that's coming out now that's new is going for that 3¾-inch size. It's just, I think with the price of plastic, it makes more sense, and you can get out a lot more figures for what you're paying for, basically.
Exactly. If a retail outlet like Walmart's going to give you 4 feet of shelf space, you can fit a heck of a lot more 4-inch figures in 4 feet than you can 6- or 8-inch figures. So it definitely makes sense.
I think the only sad thing is it would be pretty sweet to have a 6-inch, because at my desk at work, I have a Captain America and a Batman from DC UC, and then the Captain America's from Marvel Legends. It would have been pretty sweet to have like a Beachhead or a Snake Eyes up next to them, 6-inch as well, but I guess that time has probably passed.
Yeah, if they were talking about a total relaunch and, you know, an aggressive kind of new concept, 6-inch all across the board figure line, I don't think I would be interested. It would be tough for me to be interested. But if they're doing like a ceremonial kind of, you know, 10 figure set, kind of like how they did for the 25th anniversary figures, and just picked some select characters to do in the 6-inch scale, you know, some deluxe price points, you know, $12, $14, something like that, with a lot of accessories, real nice detail. You know, I'd probably go for something like that. But if they're talking about, you know, if G.I. Joe 2 comes out next year and all of a sudden all the figures are 6-inches tall, and hope I didn't just jinx anything there, but, you know, that's not something I would be interested in.
You said jinx.
Oh, jinx.
That, is that a good transition point?
That's a perfect transition
that
point.
That is an awesome transition point.
I did that on purpose.
All right, Justin, very good with the show prep. Lucky bastard. Anyways.
I don't get to say anything about the 6-inch prototypes.
Oh, Chuck, you still on the call?
Yeah, I'm still here. Yeah.
I thought you were watching wrestling, man. I'm sorry.
Oh, I'm watching wrestling. It's so funny. No, it's funny because, you know, I read the article on Justin's site, generaljoes.com, about how, you know, and I read the year, but it wasn't until Justin mentioned it. A lot of people don't realize that 2002, and even Greg touched upon it, is right around the time Hasbro got the license for Marvel from Toy Biz, who had basically been absorbed into Marvel proper, you know, but that's a whole, you know, backdoor politics, but they were just going to start making their, you know, the Hasbro branded Marvel Legends. So I'm curious, you know, as Greg was mentioning, like, could this have been a test to see, well, you know, we're going to be making these guys in a 6-inch scale. Why not try our own property in a 6-inch scale? You know, and, you know, like Greg said, I actually on Terradrome.com, I remember I posted a link there, a little thread there about if they were going to do a 6-inch Joe line, like in the Marvel Legends style, that how they could use like the Fan's Choice 2-pack template. And I remember I know it'd be like, you know, just like 10 figures, that's it, not a full line, not replacing, but just like a very special thing, and where you could have guys like, you know, Hawk and Cobra Commander, Destro and, you know, Duke, Snake Eye, Storm Shadow. You want troop builders, you can do like a Cobra Trooper and Cobra Viper. I mean, just think how great those guys, like something like the Cobra Viper would be in a 6-inch scale. And, you know, you could even throw in a little aside where you would have Sergeant Stalker with a Private First Class, or I think he was Sergeant Frank Castle. You know, a special 2-pack there with a little wink wink nudge nudge to the Marvel Comics.
No, that'd be
cool. It's like, I wouldn't buy them. I'm just not a fan. But I'm glad they didn't come out with them. But because at the time we really needed the 3 3/4 relaunch, yeah, and not at another scale.
Well, the problem is if they were going to do like a full line of 6-inch, even back then, you would run into the issue of eventually people would start saying vehicles. Right. You know, a helicopter, the vamp.
Well, and then it's like a little known fact that people don't actually realize is way back in 1982, G.I. Joe, A Real American Hero, was actually a vehicle line. It was not an action figure line. It was a vehicle line. They just released the action figures to complement the vehicles. And that's why if people, you know, realize how many vehicles were produced back then, well, that's what G.I. Joe was designed as way back when. It was first conceived as a vehicle showcase with just the figures kind of complementing it until they evolved and grew and got their own kind of personality.
Yeah. Well, my thinking was is that, you know, the cost of something like the Vamp that would be sized to fit 6-inch figures and right, would be a lot. Because, I mean, you couldn't put out a Vamp that just held 2 figures. You would need a Vamp that could hold 4 figures like the 3 3/4-inch one could. And even back in 2002, that would be, like, a lot of money.
And I'm sure that was kind of the ultimate nail in the coffin. You know, if they want to make a G.I. Joe line as it's meant to be with a vehicle showcase, then the larger scale just isn't going to work.
Exactly. Exactly. But, so yeah, so I think we were going to discuss a little person named Jinx. Yes? No?
You ruined the moment, Chuck.
You did, totally did.
You destroyed myself.
Yeah.
Well, are you saying that I jinxed your segue, Justin?
There we go. Now we can go.
You set him up, and right, sometimes he knocks him down.
There you go.
Yeah, nice. I sometimes good, yeah.
Well, speaking of Jinx, we received a rumor that someone has been cast as Jinx for the new G.I. Joe 2 movie. The lady, which I'm probably butchering her name, but it's Elodie Young. Where do we hear that rumor at, you guys?
It kind of popped up all over the place. You know, a couple kind of mainstream movie sites caught up with it. I caught it first on a little site called Heat Vision, which used to be its own little movie blog site, but, you know, comic book movie blog site, but is, I think it got absorbed by some larger installation now, but that's where I first saw it. I think it's part of Hollywood Reporter. But yeah, that's kind of where it first showed up, and then it kind of spread out from the web, you know, from there. But the cool thing about the article on Heat Vision was that they had a little embedded video from Daily Motion that kind of shows her doing some martial arts action in one of her films, which was pretty cool. And I think it's a good choice. You know, it's a relative nobody. No offense to Ms. Young, but she's a relative nobody. But she's got the look, and like it or not, that's kind of what draws most fans to the table these days, is whether or not the character looks like they should. And, you know, they don't care so much what the personality is or how the character is driven. They care much more about how they look. So, you know, obviously that's a big bonus to this actress right here. And, I'm going to regret saying this probably 12 months from now, but I'm really getting some good vibes from what I'm seeing so far with what they're doing with the sequel movie, you know, and it's way too early to tell. So I'm probably pulling this out of my ass completely, but,
wait a minute. Hold on. Let's do the Fox News alert here. Hold on, wait a minute. We need to cue this up. This Fox News alert. Justin says, what about the movie?
The G.I. Joe sequel will be 100 times better than the original.
Oh, wow. He rephrases it. Oh, all right. Fine. Whatever.
I think they're doing some good things. And Channing Tatum, yeah, you know, I'm not wild about that. But like it or not, he kind of brings people to the table. So if bringing him back is going to bring some audience back, then maybe it's worth the gamble. But I don't know anything about John Chu yet, and I'm not going to watch a Justin Bieber movie to find out who he is. So
you already have, don't lie.
I've got it on DVR. Yeah, you're right. But
baby,
The Rock.
Baby.
What the hell is that? The Rock, I think, is a great move. And this, you know, I don't know who this actress is, but she, like I said, she's got the look, and the character choices so far have been appealing. So I'm getting some good feelings about it. I don't know. Like I said, I'll probably regret that in a year, but right now I'm feeling pretty good about it. But when am I not feeling good about it?
You are a Hasbro apologist. That is Justin. Yeah.
So what do you guys
think? I don't okay, great. We don't have any female actresses in them. Well, we don't know if they're going to continue Baroness. We don't know if they're going to continue Scarlet. Cover Girl's dead, thank God. So, you know, they need to put, I guess, female sex appeal into this for the fanboys to look at. I've never been a big fan of Jinx, and everyone really seems to get on the Jinx bandwagon really quick. We need to have Jinx. We need to have Jinx. We need to have Jinx. Well, you know, somebody obviously that's involved with the movie, you know, it looks like they're thinking that way as well. I remember the first movie when they were testing that stealth suit and it happened to be an Asian woman that put it on. They're like, oh, it's Jinx.
That's hilarious.
Whatever. I just don't really get the big deal about the character. So, hey, you know, it's going to be in the next movie. Remember, folks, keep your expectations low on the movie and you'll come out a lot happier. Chuck.
Well, you know, it's funny. I think with the way they're going in terms of casting the movie, I think we're going to see a smaller, more focused cast, because the way G.I. Rise of Cobra ended, they kind of left it where Baroness would not be a part, just because, you know, she's still in prison, and, you know, right as it is, she's no longer of any use to Cobra Commander. And, you know, I think with adding Jinx, because right now you have Jinx, Snake Eyes, Roadblock, and probably Duke. So you have those, you know, four characters. And I remember reading something, I think Storm Shadow will be back, and, you know, from there where they can go with it. But I think going with a more focused teams on each side, instead of, like, you know, having larger numbers, might be able to tell a better story. Unfortunately, I think a lot of the problems from Rise of Cobra are still going to be present in, you know, G.I. Joe 2, just because those are problems that have to be there. You know, not being an American, you know, military squad, you know, not being, you know, working for, the United Nations or what have you, being
based.
Well,
we don't know if any of that stuff is in place in the sequel yet. They might have revamped that a little bit. I know I'm probably being overly optimistic, but
well, yeah, because, I mean, to be honest with you, I just can't see
them being able to market a military movie that features a real American hero in European countries. And in this day and age, you need to be able to do that to make money. And that's the bottom line. It's, you know, you got to make money.
Good point.
Yeah, I'm kind of curious to see where they go with the whole Baroness angle. I mean, nobody really liked what they did with the Baroness in the first one, but you can't lie. She's a pretty important character. So I don't know if they're just going to whitewash it. You know, so Sienna Miller has already said she's not coming back for the sequel. So who knows what they're going to do? It's kind of weird.
You know, let me ask, did anybody else get the feeling, like, after she finished the movie, Sienna Miller regretted doing it? Because, I mean, she raised such a stink over a stupid action figure. I mean, and basically the kind of stink that she raised was like, oh my God, what did I do? This is how people are going to think I look like, you know, yada yada. And I got to tell you, I actually got that feeling from a couple of the, not so much the actors, but the actresses. Because, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, didn't I read something that Rachel Nichols, who played Scarlet, is not going to be coming back as well?
Yeah, she tweeted something from her Twitter account. God, that sounds dirty. But,
bad boy. bad boy.
But she actually, the post she put up there, I can't say the tweet, made it sound like she was actually hoping to come back, and they wouldn't let her. They were going in a different direction. So I don't think she was that upset about it. Sienna Miller, I think, had kind of checked out about halfway through filming, personally. I mean, there were so many comments that came out about her complaining about, you know, Steven Sommers making comments about her boobs and just all this crazy stuff that, you know, she's kind of wacky and nutty anyway. So,
Well, you know what? This is someone who I would put in the category as Halle Berry, is that, you know, she's an Academy Award-winning actress. Not yet, though, but I mean, I think she will be someday. And, you know, with Halle Berry, she got stuck, you know, winning the Academy Award in the middle of making some sort of comic book movie. And I think Sienna Miller, she realizes that and doesn't want to get stuck, where she's on the set of, you know, Invaders from Mars 3, and she's like, oh, yeah, you won the Academy Award, you know? So I don't know if, you know, that makes sense to anybody, but I think she wanted, you know, to distance herself from these type of movies very quickly.
Yep. I'm sure she was eager to take the role when she saw that paycheck, though.
Oh, yeah. Well, no, again, yeah. But, you know, with a lot of these, you know, younger actors and actresses, some of them actually, you know, respect the craft. But,
well, she wanted to be the first actress to go from this to an Academy Award and then to, you know, a lesser movie. I mean, for God's sakes, Cloris Leachman played in Beer Fest. Where she's rubbing a sausage in her hand. Nobody should be too proud. Nobody.
Well, yeah, you just have to.
Absolutely awesome movie.
And you just have to look at, you know, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, too. I mean, he's the same exact thing happened to him. He got cast in this cheeseball G.I. Joe movie, and then all of a sudden he's doing Inception, and now he's a highly sought-after actor, and, you know, G.I. Joe 2, forget about it. So.
Well, Jason Gordon-Levitt, it was funny, because reading the interviews with him before the release of Rise of Cobra, I mean, he was, like, going into this deep thing about, you know, the way Cobra Commander's mind works, and that he was pulling, you know, all of these different niches out of the character and, you know, different things to his performance. And I truthfully got the feeling, just going by his age, this is possibly someone who did not grow up with G.I. Joe or have any idea before he got the script what G.I. Joe and or Cobra Commander was, and that, you know, so while he really brought all this to the role, it was all for naught, since, you know, it's kind of pointless. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, you can find all this great Shakespearean tragic allusions to it, but, you know, it's not going to play off and when you're wearing some sort of mask with tubes in it.
But, right.
All right. Be enough G.I. Joe 2 talk for this week. I'm sure we'll have more stuff to talk about next week. It seems like every couple days something else pops up, including if you guys get a chance, if you're on Twitter, you should probably follow a few different people. John Chu, the director, and then, of course, The Rock and Ray Park as well. Both, all three of them have been popping in little bits of news about G.I. Joe, too. So it's a good place to get news firsthand.
Definitely.
Moving on, we have a new episode of Renegades here this past weekend. Justin, did you get a chance to watch this one yet?
Well, yeah, of course. Yep. I've watched it too many times already. It's funny. This is probably, without going into too much detail about my review that I posted on my website about it, it's probably one of my least favorite episodes that we've seen in a while, and I've still watched it four times just so I can get this review stuff done. But yeah, I did check it out. You know, it was a little bit disappointing, at least I'm sure from most fans' perspectives, just because none of us really like the whole Bio-Viper angle, the whole genetically engineered Cobra Trooper, and I don't know if I have to keep on putting spoiler alerts in here about Ripcord, but he's another thing that the fans seem to hate, and they've kind of thrust him back in the spotlight, and the combination of the two just made for an episode that was, just seemed like more filler. And when you're at episode 21 in a 26 episode lifespan, you don't want filler. You want the story to be moving along. You want
time to wrap it up, folks.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, let's start going somewhere. I will say the animation, was really nice in this particular episode, especially as much as I hate the Bio Vipers, Ripcord and that green sewer Viper / Bio Viper, the battle between them was pretty cool. It flowed really well, some good impact, some good action. But, really, I don't want to sit there 20 minutes later and say, okay, there was another one down, and we're one closer to the end, and absolutely nothing happened. I mean, you can say something happened. Ripcord got the little chip in his head fried, so he's now technically free of Cobra's control, which to me was one of the more interesting parts about the character and his return. So now he's a little bit even less interesting to me. But it didn't really move me. We've got Destro, we've got Zartan, we've got all these great unexplored characters, Firefly. Why are we spending another 22 minutes on Dr. Mindbender and the Bio Vipers, who we've seen 18 times already? Let's start looking at people we haven't spent so much time on. And it seems pretty clear to me that the writers didn't know that it was going to be cut short at one season, because I would like to think that if they're at episode 21 out of 26 and they knew this was the only chance they're having to tell this story, they probably would have been moving on a little bit quicker at this point. But that's, unfortunately, when you're driving a series so tightly on continuity and really trying to build up a story, that's the risk you take. You want to spend a lot of time building the story and building this universe and tying these characters together, making these relationships, and you get canceled after one season, and then all of a sudden, where do you go from there? It's too late to really do anything. You spent so much time building things, you don't really have time to explore the universe that you've built, which is too bad. It does show me a little bit that the creators behind Renegades were thinking pretty maturely for a kid's cartoon. I mean, they were spending a lot of time building this universe, hoping to tell this story for a couple of years to come, which tells me a lot. You look at the old Sigma 6, I can't even say it without freaking out. The old Sigma 6 cartoon, they spent like 5 minutes building the universe, and then the rest of it was just stupid action. But Renegades really was kind of trying to build something, and now they're running out of time to really tell their story. So it's unfortunate, but hopefully things, we still got 5 episodes to go, so maybe things will start speeding up. But I really didn't like this past episode that much at all.
I actually thought the episode was quite good, but I do agree with a lot of your points, Justin, about how that at the 21st episode we should have more development of the main story. And like you said, I also think that the writers just didn't know. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they did know, and that by focusing on the Bio Vipers, this is how they're going to bring it on home.
Right.
But I did like the fact that Ripcord, got control of his powers. I'm 50-50 on whether or not we'll see a Ripcord figure that will have, interchangeable limbs. So we can do all that nice, Mr. Fantastic, stretchy arm stuff. But
Lord, no.
I was going to say, there's nothing G.I. Joe fans like more than their G.I. Joe characters with superpowers.
No.
Well, it's not superpowers. This is poor guy's born that, has it inside his body, let it out. But, it's not like I'm saying, give him, pack him with a little can of, ooze or something. That's been done, too. Yeah, no, I know. But one thing is, I could have sworn they resolved the whole Bio Viper thing when the Bio Viper was merged with Destro's Iron Grenadier mobile suit, and that basically the Bio Vipers would be contained in these mobile suits, and that they would have the additional armor and firepower and would be able to be controlled.
I got that impression too.
Mobile suits. Seriously, dude, you got your genres mixed up now.
I'm sorry,
stuck in Robotech and Gundam universe.
Mobile suit may not have been like the armor
snake
suit
armor
in that episode.
Armor, yeah.
Well, I don't know. They didn't call them snake armor. They called them something else. But they just called them
exo armor. But you know, it was essentially snake armor.
Yep. Yeah.
I also didn't remember Dr. Mindbender being able to control the Vipers because, every time he's tried, it's failed. This was the first time I saw him with a head harness that could actually work.
He kind of developed it in that episode with Snowjob where he had Storm Shadow with those kind of Shadow Vipers.
Yeah, but those were a different Viper. Those were the Shadow Vipers. These are basically the regular generic Bio Vipers, and I thought the Bio Vipers were just crap.
Yeah.
But, all right, but no, I mean, I thought the story was good, and I'm half-heartedly looking forward to the next couple episodes, even though I know these will be the end, and, you know, I was kind of hoping by now we'd have some word as to whether or not we'll get a DVD release, but, who knows.
iTunes.
Yep.
Download them on iTunes, and while you're downloading them on iTunes, make sure you subscribe to the program What's On Joe Mine.
There you go.
Nicely done.
Thank you. Good crossover. would it surprise you that I'm not caught up yet?
Splash, Gary. Ripcord is alive.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Nobody else does, but
I'm yeah, whatever. I got up to episode 19, and probably what I'm going to do is I'm going to get the rest of these and format them so I can watch them on my iPad, like when I'm on the airplane going up to Toronto. But one question on episode 19, not to deviate too far from what we were just talking about, 21. Dr. Monev, Dr. Venom.
Mm-hmm.
Justin, what do we think came first? I mean, did when the club was making the figure and they said, we're going to call him Dr. Venom, and then someone from Hasbro say, hey, they're calling him Monev in the cartoon, you might want – because he was never called Monev in the comic.
Yeah. That's
and it's highly coincidental. So I'm thinking there had to be planning. Mr. David Lane, schemer dude, and Hasbro got together. And I'm just making fun of Dave. Dave's a good guy. But, that's way too coincidental for something like that. I mean, I wonder who contacted who. Who came up with Monev first?
That's a good question. I'm betting – well, I don't know. I'd say the club probably did. It was probably a – they probably went hand in hand. We're putting out a Dr. Venom, this is what we want to call him, and they kind of worked together to make sure that was all on the same page. That would be my guess. I mean, I don't know for sure, but...
And the character itself kind of struck me as... Remember Anthony Perkins from The Black Hole?
Oh, yeah.
That's how Dr. Monev in that episode kind of struck me. Kind of even had some of the same facial expressions, a very calm, yet... The dude's crazy, but he's like a calm crazy, calm deranged, that type of thing. And Anthony Perkins pulls that role off no matter what movie he's in. But I seem to remember it the most on The Black Hole. I guess all we need is a couple episodes from now that, Maximilian comes and chops him in half or something like that. But
that Dr. Monev or Dr. Venom, however you want to say it, has probably been one of my single favorite kind of guest star characters we've seen in G.I. Joe Renegade so far. They captured him so perfectly from the voice actor, Ben Linus from Lost.
Yep.
That was just perfect. His attitude, his double-crossing nature, it was spot on. It was perfect Dr. Venom, and probably one of my favorite moments of the G.I. Joe Renegade series was that episode. He really made that episode for me.
Yeah, I agree, and they even borrowed from Venom in the comic where he's your worst enemy or your best friend, depending on what's benefit for him.
Right.
Getting out of Sierra Gordo, he needed everyone to help him get that plane started.
Yep.
But the second the plane was started in the air, I mean, he was gonna start chucking people out if he could.
Exactly.
And that's classic Dr. Venom, where opportunistic, I'm with you, but the second I see the airtight doors at the end of the hallway open, and I jump through them and close the doors and turn around and say, you know, basically, ha ha, yep. There's Dr. Venom. Good job. If anyone from the Renegades writing staff ever gets the chance to hear that, thumbs up from me, because you definitely hit the character spot on.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
You know, I think the question with naming him Dr. Monev might be, if you remember going back to the 25th anniversary line, and even further back than that, there were some copyright issues to names. And I've noticed now that Hasbro, and instead of just naming someone Stalker, they'll name him Sergeant Stalker, mm-hmm. or, you know, and stuff like that, so they can get the copyrights. So I think it's possible that with Dr. Monev, if calling him Dr. Venom Monev is, you know, a copyright thing for them, that they can be able to use Dr. Venom, but, you know, without having to pay royalties to whoever might own a trademark or something.
Well, what they did here is Monev is his name. It's not, you know, what they did for Sergeant Stalker or Agent Scarlet or anything like that, or because they didn't have – Monev was actually his name on the file card. It would be his last name, whatever. What's his first name?
Gustav?
I can't remember.
Yeah, it starts with A. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Archibald?
Yeah, there you go. Archibald Monev.
Go, Chuck, go.
Go. I should know that stuff. I'm impressed, Chuck. Good. Very good. Very, very good.
Go me. It's my birthday. Go me.
Don't push your luck. Anyways.
That was the lowest point ever. Of this podcast.
I know. It's his name. So, but in the comic, he was never identified as, you know, anything but Dr. Venom. And that could have easily been his code name. But
it's pretty safe that his given name wasn't Venom. But.
Yeah.
Well, the movie figures were being released as Conrad Dukehauser, Shayna Scarlett O'Hara, so that could be following that trend as well.
True.
Who knows? I think sometimes they just flip a coin someday and say, give them the full code name, or, you know, let's mix in agent or special agent or sergeant or lieutenant, whatever.
All right. That wraps up our Renegades talk for the week and also our news for the week. Next, we've had a couple people asking us, because we've been talking about the questions for SK Omega. So people have been asking us, what is SK Omega? So Gary, would you give us a 2 minutes background behind SK Omega?
Sure, and Justin, please follow up in case I miss anything. SK Omega is definitely inspired by the O-ring era of G.I. Joe. It has had and currently has members that were involved with the birth of the classic vintage G.I. Joe line that we're used to, the early eras, early 3¾ era, involved in this project. And it is their 3¾ scale O-ring figures that are going to be highly sculpted. No relation to Joe whatsoever. It's this entire different universe, entirely new names, new everything. But you'll see a lot of the stuff is Joe inspired. For instance, the Al helicopter or the missile base. Those definitely harken back to things we've seen in a comic or toys we possibly had or we didn't have as a kid that maybe were like the missile base, the Sears exclusive. It's a small operation. It's not very many people involved. It's going to be, as far as I know, online only in terms of sales through online retailers. You will not see this stuff in stores. It's not that big of an operation. Now they can come on the show and pleasantly surprise us and said, "Hey, you're going to find all of our stuff in Toys R Us." Those of you expecting it to find it in a Ross or whatever, keep on thinking that you're never going to see it, but that's the initial plan that we've known and read about for some time. Gosh, Justin, help me out here. What else are we looking at? We're looking at a comic too and some other stuff as well. Other media.
I mean, the initial presentation at JoeCon a couple of years ago, made it seem like they were really going for a multi-tiered approach, and they actually had a little snippet from a CGI cartoon that they were going to do. They're going to be doing a comic book. I'm not sure if plans have changed over the past couple of years or not. I don't imagine they have. So as far as I know, that's kind of still their plan. The important thing to remember about the guys behind SK Omega is they're huge fans of the G.I. Joe brand and G.I. Joe property, and they're really trying to capture the spirit of G.I. Joe, a Real American Hero from the 80s, that what really drew people in the 80s, and they're trying to take that and run with it. The figures are going to be, they're all ring style. Our initial assumption right now, and it was confirmed at the time, again, who knows what's changed in the past couple of years, but they have screws in the back, they have metal rivets, metal T-bars with the hips, very much like the traditional 80s G.I. Joe, but tooled and sculpted with a more modern style, if that makes any sense. If you look at the vintage figures, a lot of people kind of dismiss the old school 80s G.I. Joe stuff because it looks so dated, without thinking that people could probably take the O-ring format and kind of sculpt more impressive stuff on top of it and make that format viable again. And I think that's really what they're trying to do. They've got some really cool guys involved in the process. There's a guy named Guy Cassidy who did a ton of vehicle design in the 80s, vehicles like
Cross Country. That's
Cross Country is Guy Cassidy. If you look at Cross Country's face, that's him. But he did the Persuader, he did the Rolling Thunder. He's got a really impressive resume of very cool 80s vehicles, and he's doing a lot of these vehicle designs. The Hive playset is kind of his baby. It's important just to know that that's really what drives these guys. They want to make us feel like we're kind of back in time and we're in the 80s again, seeing this stuff come out, but with a 21st century technique. They're originally hoping to launch in the middle of 2011. Obviously, that's probably not happening at this point. It might have gotten pushed back a little bit because, like Gary said, they're a pretty small operation. They had some pretty strong ambitions, and reality has probably stared them in the face a couple of times. So that's something folks got to keep in mind. The figures are going to be 3 3/4 inch. There's that transport helicopter plan to come out. That's very much like the transport Cobra helicopter we've all been hoping for. If you look at stuff like the Hive and like that helicopter, you kind of get an idea of what their mindset is. Like I said, these guys are old school G.I. Joe fans who are making toys that they want or that they would have wanted in the 80s. They're taking that cool Sears missile base and they're making it three-dimensional, kind of tying it almost into a pterodrome type of situation with a whole wraparound dome surface. They're taking that Cobra transport helicopter and, realizing that Hasbro was unwilling to do something like that, so they're making it instead. And it's got really good potential, and I really hope that fans give it a chance and have some patience, kind of let them do their thing, because, if they can hit with this comic and with this cartoon and with this toy line kind of all at once, it could be a very cool throwback to the 80s and really remind folks of the golden years of G.I. Joe and hopefully get some really cool stuff out there. I know they're putting a hell of a lot of work into it. That probably goes without saying, but that's kind of that's where it stands.
One of the questions we got that we don't know yet, that a lot of people, and I've seen more than one person ask this question, and I'm sure we will ask this during the interview, is will these be compatible with the modern era figures? In terms of, I would imagine probably the foot peg hole, is that probably what they're talking about? And maybe in scale too.
Maybe the vehicles that the vehicles would.
We don't know yet. It's a very good question, but that is definitely one that we will ask them during the interview. Another one came in on Facebook from friend of the program, Jared. From the mock-up packaging, the figures appear to be classic O-ring style, correct? My question is this. Will the sculpting style of SKO and Virus figures fit with my 85 through 86 Joes? Pretty close. I would expect SKO to look better.
Yeah, I'm just thinking probably the sculpting is going to be a little bit tighter. They'll probably fit in the same way, any of the new parts that we got in those early 21st century comic packs, with the newly sculpted heads. They look different than the vintage stuff because they're a little bit cleaner sculpts, a little bit more professional. I don't want to say professional. It's a bad term because they were equally professional back then. It's technology that's kind of caught up with us. but they, you know, they look a little bit tighter, a little bit more detailed, a little bit more in scale. I can't speak for that to be sure because I haven't seen any of the final figures in person yet. But I would approximate it that way. You know, look at the comic. You know, imagine if Hasbro tooled up a brand new figure, you know, in O-ring style, and that's kind of what you're going to see. You know, something. I know they did Horror Show, so maybe something like that. Kind of compare him to how those 80s figures look, and that might be kind of what we're looking at.
And Jared follows up, is the sculpting style more classic Real American Hero or New Sculpt, or is it something else entirely? I would say that it's going to have calls to and homages to, but I think really in order for SK Omega to stand out on its own, it probably should be something, you know, new entirely. It's new but different, or new but familiar. Let's put it that way.
I don't want to speak for them either. I want to wait to get confirmation from the interview, but I seem to remember something in my head. The figures will have C grips. They were very specific about that, which is what we had with the original G.I. Joe mm-hmm. in the 80s. I seem to remember them saying something about a swivel wrist or a swivel forearm. I don't want to say that for sure because I might be totally wrong, and I don't want to set incorrect expectations.
The box mock, the box mocks,
yeah,
that they had kind of showed that, but again, artwork versus what is true right. to life is could be two different things. But again, good questions, and let's see if we got anything else. Greg, do you remember any other questions that we got coming in that maybe we could get to the bottom of real quick?
I think there's a couple just asking about just checking for sure if they were going to get the yellow helicopter in the base because they were showing, but people weren't sure if they were still going to come out. Was it coming out in waves or was it going to be all one big wave?
Well, I believe the first, all the figures that were shown in mock form at JoeCon, I believe that is the wave. Very much how the, you know, when the original 13 came out for Joe, you know, it wasn't like you saw Snake Eyes, Scarlet and Stalker, you know, 1 month, and then 2 months down the line you saw Flash, Short Fuse, and Grunt. And then they came out all at once. And I, again, we'll clear this up more in the interview, but the impression that I get, Justin, back me up, maybe I'm getting the wrong impression, but the impression that I'm getting is that they would come out all at once. You would have, you know, all the Hive, or excuse me, all of the SK, the Silent Knights, and then you would have all of the Virus come out all at once.
Yeah, I don't know if that's the case or not. I know there's different assortments, but I'm not sure exactly what encompasses which assortment. I can't confirm that one way or the other. I don't really know. I mean, they did. I would imagine that everything that we saw at that JoeCon show 2 years ago is probably the first wave. So everything that you think is coming is probably coming at once. But there's probably stuff that we don't quite know about yet that's probably staggered in there as second or third assortments.
Okay. Well, before we speculate too much and get people thinking big dreams, if you have any more questions, you can send them into whatsonjoemind@gmail.com. And also, post your questions on the wall of our Facebook group. It is facebook.com/whatsonjoemind. And then that pretty much wraps us up this week. Do you guys have anything else you want to talk about real quick?
No, I'm good. Justin?
Yeah, I don't think so. It's been kind of a little bit of a slow week. I mean, we were saved a little bit by the Jinx news and by the new Renegades episode, but no, I don't have a whole lot new stuff to say. I gotta reiterate again that how excited I am that we're getting this new movie coming out next year. It's gonna make it real fun to cover this stuff for the next 14 months, even if we do have to put up with Chuck's horrible rock impressions for that 14 months.
What was that, you jabroni?
What?
I thought I had him on mute, sorry.
No, but it's, everything's good to go. I will say, I do have to kind of, I might tick some people off here, but I was listening to our show from last week, and, you know, I was a little bit disappointed that we were coming down a little bit hard on the Collectors Club, I think, and I just want to kind of reiterate my support for the Collectors Club and kind of say that, you know, yes, we were kind of joking around about their deadlines and stuff like that. But one thing that we got to kind of keep in mind is that they are a fairly small operation. They do have a lot on their plate. As I was looking back at BotCon and what was going on at BotCon and thinking about how many full-time employees they have to kind of handle that whole thing, you know, I think they do deserve some props, and they get a lot of bad flack in the community, and I just kind of want to make sure that we don't pile onto that. We are going to criticize when criticism is warranted, and I think criticism is certainly warranted. But I just want to make sure that I get that out there that that I think what they do some pretty impressive stuff, and maybe that's just me saying that because I'm sitting here with my 2011 con set and loving all the figures inside it and stuff. But I just think we've got to take the good with the bad with the Collectors Club and not
you take the good, you take the bad.
Exactly.
And there you have.
Be fair about
the facts of life.
Well done, Gary.
Yeah, thank
I was
you.
I was rambling there. I didn't know where I was going.
There you go.
But I was listening to it, you know, in show prep yesterday, and I was like, you know, we were kind of hammering on them a little bit. And yes, it's you know, they do deserve some criticism, and they just like anybody else in the public eye, you know, they get what they pay for and they get what they deserve. But I just want to make sure we don't pile on and that we support the club when support is warranted. And I think for what they do and the size of their operations, they still do some pretty...
Oh, we'll be stuff. Giving the club a lot more attention here coming up. I mean, once they start announcing the subscription, and
exactly.
Now that the robot convention's over, we can actually begin to, you know, get the groundwork laid for our convention here coming up. So, there's more good things on the horizon than bad things on the horizon for the club, but
and I know I think Gary, you and I think we kind of share the same opinions on the club.
Yeah,
we have to bring up the bad when it comes up because they, you know, they need to know what they need to improve. But obviously, you've been to what, like 9 conventions straight, 8 conventions straight, something like that.
I'm the man. Yep,
I've been to 7 of the past 9, so obviously we have some love for it and. And I think they're doing great stuff, especially with the amount of staff they have on board. And I'm really excited about the subscription figures coming up.
And a special hello to Kathy and Angie. Hi, guys.
Throw that in. But anyway, I'll step off my soapbox.
Chuck, what you got?
I got nothing.
You got nothing?
I got nothing. I'm sure you all saw the video. I finally opened Low Light.
Yeah, about that. Did you ever mention... What's on Joe Mine and the entire... I believe he goes, I got it from my friend Greg. He never said, my co-host, Greg, from What's on Joe Mine.
Did he mention my name? I felt like he just said, I got it from somebody.
I can't remember if he mentioned your name or not. He totally blew off the show. It's like, dude, where's your cross-promotion? You have learned nothing from wrestling.
Chuck, I'm deleting your story right now.
Well, how about the fact that it never dawned on me that stupid radio... actually plugged into the side of the backpack. I'm actually going to have to do with like a supplemental video and say, hey, look! But I got to tell you, you know, everybody was going on about the bullet, like the bullet is the easiest thing to lose. That, the sight for the rifle, forget about it. That thing does not stay on the rifle at all. I mean, I was going to actually talk to Justin about it and see if I'm doing something wrong because... It pegs into the gun fine. You turn it upside down, you shake it, it doesn't fall out. But once the gun is in Low Light's hands, the slightest nudge and that sight goes flying all over the place.
Oh, in the computer business, we call that an ID10T error.
Would that be considered an end-user interface issue?
The problem is with the keyboard and the chair, yeah.
Yes. Greg, anything?
Nope, not at all. It's just like I mentioned before. If you guys see us at the convention, feel free to say hi. I'll try to be getting in line early Friday morning to interview some people and just talk and see what's going on. And
by early in the morning, he means he's wussing out and not staying there overnight, like he said he was going to.
You're missing half the fun, dude.
Make sure you give him a really hard time about that when you see him there.
You do have a mission, whether you know it or not. Is that's you got to find the nearest Timmy Hose, and you're getting Timbits.
Oh, for sure. I'll try to deliver some. We'll see how it goes, though.
Wait a minute, Greg. Your other mission, which you have no choice in accepting, is if you do find an Ashiko up there, you need to get one for me and Gary. Or Gary, did you get one already?
I'm good to go. It's just you, man.
Oh, yeah, I needed the Ashiko.
All right, if it's some pop, if anything pops up in the next week, I'll make sure I look around, but I'm guessing it won't be this soon.
Oh, who knows? Maybe, hopefully. I give hope. Okay.
Oh, let's
keep
get
that dream alive, Chuck.
All right, let's get us on out of here with some travel music. Talk to us at whatsonjomind@gmail.com. Listen to us at iTunes and also at whatsonjomind.podbean.com. Read about us on Facebook at facebook.com/whatsonjomind. You can find us at our various threads of the community at Terradrome, Joe Customs, JBL, His Tank, Joe Classified, and now on the Collectors Club site. If you can find it. See, that's... Oh, man, I just made fun of the club, didn't I?
That's good. They deserve it for the website.
We look forward toward hearing from you. We will return on Friday for a special recording on-site and in-line at the Canadian Convention for a short show. Time permitting, we'll be joined by guests, maybe Beachhead Mike, if we can hear him. Maybe James Cavanaugh, maybe some other folks, along with the usual cast of suspects that we have. Saturday, we'll be doing two shows, which I'm not sure if we'll edit together or not, but we'll be joined by the Convention Day voice of the Canadian Convention. And that's none other than Ryan himself, Scramble. So we'll... that will be the first ever podcast simulcast during a Joe convention. So maybe it's something we could set the table for the big Joe con later on down the road. But we're going to make some history here at Canada. But until then, just keep the emails coming for SK Omega and anything that you have about the show. I think that's it for us guys. Unless you guys have any last minute thoughts that hit your mind.
We've
got it.
You all
really
make sure to listen.
Oh, God, here we go. All right, we'll see you guys later in the week for a special edition of What's On Joe Mind. So for our showrunner Greg, co-host Chuck and Justin, I'm Gary. Good night, folks, and we'll talk to you next time from Canada. You've got to duck it. You've got to keep that diesel trucking. Just put that hammer down and give it hell. Eastbound and down, load it up and trucking. Are we gonna do what they say can't be done? We've got a long way to go and a short time.